Well, good afternoon, good evening, and not quite good night yet, but welcome back to A Link to the Cast, the UK's premier video games podcast. I hope you're well. This is episode 13 of A Link to the Cast, and coming up on the programme, we've got reviews of Heavy Rain on PlayStation 3, we'll talk Spirit Tracks on DS, and we're going to reload a review of Portal, looking ahead to Portal 2. Oh, by the way, you've just heard, or you're just hearing the theme tune running underneath us, which is has taken some stick. I got a review of the podcast, and it was from somebody who was of a certain age, i.e. over the age of 40, who didn't know they were listening to the correct thing because they didn't know that the music was related to video games.
Well, I suppose it's just supposed to sound computer gamey, isn't it?
I see, I thought that made perfect sense, and people commented, and on the last episode where we left a slightly extended version, everyone was going, oh man, love the new music.
Well, and, you know, thanks, but, appreciated.
But people aren't going to hear it and think, well, what's this?
Well, I'll tell you what, the idea is, when I was putting it together, is at the beginning, it's a little bit like you stood outside maybe a big castle, some sort of Lynx gate, you know, sort of a Zelda-type castle-type thing. There's some dramatic music, and then it goes into a sort of more Mario-y sort of feel. I don't know, but you can hate it if you want, but there you go.
I thought it made perfect sense anyway. Should we reacquaint ourselves with the team? You've just heard Brian Shelf. He's the man who looks at all things Xbox 360. There's Rick, our PS3 man. How's it going, Rick?
Hey, how's it going?
Excellent. And I'm Mick. I look at all things Nintendo, both on Wii and DS. Coming up then, Heavy Rain on PS3, big title for the PlayStation. Spirit Tracks on DS. Has it managed to iron out the problems that Phantom Hourglass has? No. And Portal Reloaded, a look back at Portal. Great title, and ahead to Portal 2, which is coming soon. And we're also going to look at the big stories happening in the world of video games right now. Welcome to A Link to the Cast, episode 13. Okay, so it's this part of the show where we're about to do the news, but just before we do the news, we do the headline competition, the much vaunted headline competition. I've made up a word there. Is it vaunted?
Much vaulted. A lot of people leap over it.
It is, and it's the headline competition, the way it works. I used to make up a story from the world of video games. Now I take a genuine one as a means of appeasing, shall we say, Rick and Brian, who hate this part of the show. But, well, it goes like this. I come up with a story, or I pick out a story, and you have to imagine what the headline would be if it was to run in one of the tabloid newspapers. So think of a clever headline related to this story, and it's the news that the BBC has signed a contract with Doctor Who and Nintendo for them to create a new Doctor Who video game, which will be coming to Wii and DS. So the story is that the BBC have done an agreement with Doctor Who and Nintendo to create a Doctor Who video game. Does that make sense, Rick?
Yeah.
Are you all right there, Rick?
No.
Okay, whatever. Right, so think of your answers, and I'll get them before the end of the podcast. So Doctor Who is going to have a video game on the Nintendo Wii and DS consoles. That makes sense?
Yep.
Let's do the news. Okay, well, I'll tell you what, should we start with one of the big announcements of the week and of the month? It's the news that the PlayStation Arc, the new motion controller for PlayStation 3, has been renamed. First of all, it's going to be the PlayStation Move, and second of all, that it's going to look like a right old dog's dinner.
I think it looks like something, I'm not even going to use the word, what I think it looks like. I think it looks like a novelty toy.
Yes.
of some form, a form of rude toy.
I posted some pictures of it on our Twitter feed. Just follow A Link to the Cast on there. But basically, it's like a nunchuck in one control and in one hand. And in the other hand, it's what I would describe as like a Wiimote sort of thing. But on the end of it is like a big orb, probably the size of what, a ping pong ball, shall we say?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way that works is you have a camera which looks at you, and then it replaces on screen the one that you've got in your hand with, say, a tennis racket, so you can swing and hit the tennis ball as it comes. To me, it looks like they've sort of missed the whole point of the Wiimote, which I think is what they're trying to do. They're also trying to hit back at Natal or Natal, which is coming out on Microsoft Xbox 360 as well. And I just wonder whether or not they've just missed the goalposts by a massive margin, because it just seems to me to be iToy 2.
You know, it's all going to stand and fall on the software. It's the uses that are put through. But I just think it's very, very weird. It's constantly felt like Sony are playing catch-up with a lot of these things. And I think a lot of people are playing catch-up with how popular the Wiimotes became. And I know a lot of hardcore gamers criticise them as saying that they're not sensitive enough. But, you know, it's sort of a little bit between the two. And just from an aesthetic point of view, I think they look ludicrous. They look hideous. So, you know, I think you're often off to a bad start if they look stupid, because they're just going to get criticised. Having said that, you know, everyone laughed at the name Wii when it first came out, and it went on to be, you know, the biggest selling console. So, you know, who knows? It'll stand and fall on the software. Let's just hope they get the price right.
I mean, you say about Sony being just behind. This was due to come out sort of roundabout now-ish, give or take a couple of months. It's actually been put back now to almost online with when Natal is going to come out. You know, if they were looking to get the jump, something's gone wrong, and it's gone wrong again for Sony.
Yeah, could well be. Having said that, I don't know. Let's just wait and see when it comes out. There might be an absolutely killer title. Just have to wait and see.
You're listening to A Link to the Cast, episode 13. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for downloading this podcast. You can follow us via Facebook and Twitter. Just go to the website and you can find our links there. But also, you can find a competition where you can win a copy of Red Steel 2. And we're going to do a review of that very soon. But if you want to get your hands on the game, which is coming out very soon, depending on when you're listening to this, go to the website, which you can find a link to via www.alinktothecast.co.uk. A copy of Red Steel 2 could be won if you go to our website. Last month, we were saying that PlayStation 3 would finally start outselling the Wii and Microsoft Xbox 360. In the US, were we right?
I don't know, were we?
Rick, were we right?
No.
No, you're right. We weren't right. We were absolutely wrong, because last month the 360 sold 422,000 consoles. The Wii only managed to sell 397,000. I say only managed 397,000, and the PS3 360,000. So the Xbox 360 makes a comeback, and actually that's now outselling both consoles.
There is no motive at the moment for anyone to turn out any new hardware, because they are still all selling massive amounts of units. Who would have thought? I mean, how old's the Wii now? What, four years, something like that?
Came out back end of 96.
Yeah, so 4 years.
Oh, 96, 2006.
Yeah, more than 4 years old. And still selling that number of units. And I don't know how many sort of units of game they're still selling. And there's really no impetus at the moment to actually drive forward any advances in technology. So, you know, I don't know what the point I was trying to make was.
Yeah, no, it was a good one. I'll tell you what, it actually takes us on to the Wii, which is the sort of talking about the big year of the hardcore title for Wii. I mean, you say that when they've got Mario Galaxy 2 coming out, but, you know, new Metroid title. But Monster Hunter Tri is going to be free online play. The way this works in Japan is you pay, I think it's a monthly subscription of around about $9, I think it is, and you can play online. This is going to come in the UK free online. It's going to come as well bundled with Wii Speak and also a new Black Classic Controller Pro as well. Now, the Classic Controller hasn't really taken off because there's not really a killer title for that. Wii Speak has been a bit of a disaster because it only worked, I think, with Animal Crossing and The Conduit, which was dreadful, as I have mentioned on this show on numerous occasions. The way Monster Hunter works, so for people who haven't played on, you join up with mates and friends from around the world and you sort of try and attack and kill and capture different monsters. So the use of the Wii Speak actually seems to fit quite well. I mean, do you think this might be the thing that might finally make Wii Speak be the big title?
Well, you just hope that that Wii Speak could be integrated into more online stuff. I've got a Wii Speak. You've got a Wii Speak. We never speak on it because we've never, you know, I wasn't going to get Conduit after you got it and said what a big dog's dinner it was. You were never going to get Animal Crossing. So, you know, let's just hope it gets integrated into more things. If this works well, then it may well. I just still can't. You know, what we need is Mario Kart with Wii Speak. That's it. That's what will absolutely solidify it as the perfect must-have essential item. I just hope this Monster Hunter game is worth shelling out on.
No, I hope so too. And hopefully, you know, the idea of just a software update on Mario Kart, it must be the most simple thing just to allow that Wii Speak channel to override the sound. You think it must work. It surely, it's a possibility.
I don't know, because Wii is a little bit different because it's not as powerful a console as Xbox and PlayStation, and the online element wasn't really as built into it, as integrated as it is on Xbox and PS3, because they had a background in it. I don't know whether it is possible. I don't know whether you can patch software in the same way, because there's no hard drive, for these software patches to sit on. There are on the other ones. I don't know if it's possible. So I think maybe sort of retro engineering, it might not be physically possible. I think it might be something you have to send a new disc out for, which they're never going to do. So it's a nice idea, but I don't think it's possible.
Rick, do you know if it's possible?
No.
No, I didn't think you did either.
Negative. You're a bit negative today, Rick, if you don't mind me saying so.
No.
Oh, you don't mind me saying so. Good.
Stand by, Rick. We're going to get you a review of Heavy Rain on PS3 in a sec. Okay, you're listening to A Link to the Cast. Heavy Rain on PlayStation 3, Spirit Tracks on DS, and also Portal Reloaded. It's our own review of Portal off the back of the fact that Portal 2 is coming very soon. But without a doubt, the big release of the month has been Heavy Rain on PlayStation 3, which Rick has been playing.
Yeah. Heavy Rain is the much-hyped new interactive drama for the PS3, and as such, it's got to be said right from the offset that I know we're a games podcast, but Heavy Rain isn't so much a game but more of a film that you kind of participate in. It gives you the opportunity to change the story as it happens. So in Heavy Rain, you get the opportunity to control four people. These are characters whose lives are all brought together by the acts of this origami killer. He's an unidentified serial killer who kidnaps young boys, drowns them, and leaves their bodies on wasteland with just an origami figure as his like calling card. In keeping with the context of the game being an interactive drama, as you play it, as you experience it, controlling it is boiled down to a few basics. You've essentially got a walk button, and then you use the left stick to change the direction your characters walk in, and then all the interactions that you have are mapped onto the right analog stick or face button, so you know you press X down or hold a few sequences down to do more tricky tasks. So it's pretty user-friendly. And in fact, the difficulty level for the game is dictated by your proficiency with a pad. So if you're a novice, you basically tell the game at the beginning that you don't really know your way around the controller, and it gives you a bit more time for things. So it gives you a bit more leeway. But as such, what you do and what you choose to do is only from a select few options that are available. So it's not like a game where you've got complete freedom or anything like that. You know, you can use your character to maybe start the car up, or you can get out and ask a few more people a few questions, or you can just leave the scene, like I said before. So, you know, you've only got a few kind of options available to it at any one time, but those options each have consequences and, you know, effects that might come back to haunt you later on in the game. So it's up to you to choose what your character does from those options available. And, you know, it can get quite interesting in some stages, like when you're playing a private investigator, Scott Shelby, he's one of the characters there, you find yourself trapped in a convenience store that you just sort of popped in to ask a few questions. And while you're at the back of the shop, a guy comes in with a gun to try and rob the store. So do you just try and confront the guy and just, you know, try and talk him down, show yourself and, you know, just tell him that it's not worth, you know, killing anyone because he's going to get in a lot of trouble, and you know Scott Shelby's an ex-policeman, he's clearly going to be able to identify him? Or do you try and maybe pick up a bottle from the wine shelves and maybe creep up behind the guy and try and knock him out? So yeah, you've got all kinds of different options that are available to you, but they are very much just options available to you, and you know you get to choose. And the trick comes in this, in the control mechanism and how you do it, because like I said before, it's all mapped down to the buttons. But if you fumble a button, if you do something wrong, then a consequence of that might come about. So like you might drop the bottle as you're just trying to quietly lift it off the shelf. It'll make a noise. The guy with the gun's going to be really annoyed that you're clearly trying to creep up on him, and he's going to point the gun at you, and then all of a sudden you're in a whole different situation. And that really is testament to the next concept, and the fact that because it's an interactive drama, your characters have only one life. They are humans. They don't have extra lives. It's not like a game in that sense. So any error that you might make may have fatal consequences, which could change the course of the story in later sections. So you know, it's not just about trying to get through a situation. It's trying to decide how you want to do it and what the risks are involved and whether or not you may end up killing a few innocent people and how you deal with that later on. It's quite an interesting sort of balance that the game strikes. Well, I say game, experience. But getting to the end of Heavy Rain, that's the point whether or not you discover if you've got the idea of it. Personally, as soon as I'd finished the 8 or so hour storytelling experience, I wanted to get back in again and find out how the story changes. You know, if I'd not made some of the mistakes I made in the first run, see if I could maybe catch the culprit, bring him back to a different kind of justice. I don't want to spoil too much here, but like I say, those 8 hours, which can be short for a AAA kind of game, you know, these days, they were brilliant. They were so much more than I'd expected from a usual game. They were tense and thought-provoking. They were harrowing and just incredibly involving. I can't stress the almost emotive aspect of this game enough. They weren't perfect. There's a few moments when the experience loses its way a bit. Notably, there's one bit where the private investigator I mentioned before, Scott Shelby, he goes a bit ultra-violent, which, you know, when you consider this is a game that has 2 hours maybe before you even see a gun, to have this kind of crazy bloodbath just 3/4 of the way through just kind of jarred a bit with the artistic direction of the rest of the experience. But for what it is, it's an evolving, a challenging, dramatic experience, and it's absolutely unique in that sense. And I've got to say, it's brilliant to boot.
And what will make you stop playing Heavy Rain on PS3, Rick?
Well, I'd probably stop playing this game for maybe over-contortion of my hands. Some of the trickiest sequences, maybe you've basically got to hold maybe a sequence of 4 or 5 buttons down in kind of an order, and you can end up really contorting your hand to do this. But that's kind of the point, you know. Your character might be trying to squeeze through an electric fence without touching any of the wires, so they're obviously contorting through it, and you've got to kind of manipulate the way that you're playing this game to match. So yeah, probably over contortion. Either that or the desire to actually, you know, play a game like Modern Warfare or something.
That was Rick's review of Heavy Rain on PlayStation 3. Yeah, I played it myself in Manchester, actually, at a HMV store, you know, behind a closed curtain, because it's a 15-rated game. But there was something about it, and it did actually make me think, this is the sort of game I could really get into, and this is the sort of game which would probably make me want to buy a PlayStation 3.
Exactly, same for me, and I've had one and sold one, and now I kind of regret it because I really would like to have a go at it. It sounds intriguing. Whether the idea of it is slightly more enthralling than the actual play of it, I don't know.
But when I first mentioned it to you, you said something along the lines of, is it not just like a point and clicker or something like that?
It's just like choose your own adventure, basically, isn't it? Mm. But I don't know. It's just something about it. It sounds like it's just an interesting concept. I quite like the idea of seeing how the stories, you know, me talking about stories is amazing. But I'm quite interested in how all the stories sort of fit into each other. I expect it'd bore me rigid, but there you go. At least it makes me think about buying one. So job done.
Job done by Sony. Well done. Thanks for that one, Rick. Stand by, because we're going to look again at Portal, which is a cracking title on Xbox 360. And Brian Shelf has been hammering it recently because he's really looking forward to Portal 2, which is coming, I understand, very soon. But I'll tell you what, my review this week is Spirit Tracks on DS. Now, Brian Shelf, you will agree with me on this, that The Phantom Hourglass, which was an okay Zelda title to start off with, had some serious, serious flaws. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely, yeah.
The problems, which were Phantom Hourglass, the first of all, the travelling on the boat was too repetitious and it took too long, that's yep. fair to say. And the second was the temple, which you had to keep returning to, going down and down and down and down, but having to go through the same levels over and over and over again.
Yeah, and you could have little shortcuts that you could take when you got new weapons and stuff, but that was only after you'd done the same thing 2 or 3 times anyway. And if you kind of forgot the order in which you did stuff, you'd end up scratching your head. So if you put it down for a week and came back, it's like, oh, I've forgotten how I solved that puzzle. And, you know, in some ways, it was quite infuriating and it made me give up.
Which brings me on to Spirit Tracks, which is essentially, it's not a sequel, but it's sort of set within the same world, minus all the water. The boat is replaced with a train. And you are this young Link character who is an engineer, and he's just passed his exams and he travels over to the castle to receive his certificate of merit from Princess Zelda. As that all happens, the number of events occur, which means that Zelda's spirit is sort of detached from her body. And I won't get into the story too much, but the spirit of Zelda gets detached from her body and almost sort of interlinked with Link. And you send out on your quest to sort of solve the problems, kill the bad guy, save the princess, and all that sort of thing as well. As I say, the boat is gone. It's replaced with a train. The format, though, exactly the same as you would expect with any other sort of Zelda title. You know, get the sword, find the maps to unlock the levels, to go down to the dungeons, to the temples, and all that sort of thing. That's exactly the same. Are you looking for anything different? If you are, you're not really going to find it here. But what you are going to find is a number of tweaks to that Phantom Hourglass title, which I think Nintendo in the end realised there were some sort of big errors in there. They have been sort of, knocked out. Let's use the first one was the temple that you had to keep returning to, which got so much stick, and rightly so, because again, it was the thing that made me just think, it's not worth my effort, this. What's that been replaced with? It's been replaced with a new tower. Now, the tower is split into different blocks. Now, you would think, are you going to have to go up the tower instead of down the tower? Well, no, thankfully, they've replaced it with sort of a, what you can do, you go up the central staircase, and you can opt in at different levels. So that's much better now. That works a lot better, because you don't have to keep going up through each level separately. The format, though, exactly the same. You know, you've got the knights and the guards that you've got to get past. For instance, on this one, though, Zelda can go into the guards and you can use her spirit to take over the guard and attack other guards so you can destroy them, which they were obviously very difficult to destroy in the other game. So that all happens now. A couple of other things that are in there. The train, is it that much different to the boat? Not really, no. Are you still often going on this train for long, long journeys where it's actually a little bit boring? Yes, you are. Are there a couple of shortcuts in there? Yes, there are. Are there more baddies you have to deal with on the way? Yes, they are. But are you essentially still just traveling for a great amount of distance, not doing a great deal? Yes. So the temple situation probably improved. The map situation and the travel situation, the issues, I have to say, are absolutely still there. This is a game which you've got to get sort of at least 2 hours into to really sort of get a sense, really, that it's a great sort of title. That those magic moments that you get in all Zelda games don't really happen too much in this game to start off with. And as you go and you go on the journey, you think, oh, this is all right. Later on in the game, maybe 2 to 3 hours in there, you start to get those little moments where you think, ah, I like this. You get to be able to, for instance, play like a little panpipe where you're blowing on it and you're using this stylus to move the panpipe so you can play certain tunes to unlock certain things. Those are the sort of classic Zelda things which I think are great. If I give you another example, on one of the temples, you have to sort of set these bells up. And you go through different sections, and at each end of each section is essentially you bring in this bell into this main room. Then you've got to work out which order to play the bell in. So you're thinking, well, where does it tell me? I can't see it anywhere. It doesn't seem to make any sense. And there's a room just off it where underneath the floor is covered with snow. And as you throw a boomerang, which you've collected by this, through the flames, it then melts the snow and reveals underneath a ginormous sort of musical score sheet. And on there you think, ah, that's how it's done. And it's quite clever in that way. And that's when you think, ah, now these are the great moments. There's a couple of other things in there as well. Although I'm slagging off Phantom Hourglass, there's something great about when you see Linebeck's grandson for the first time. And he's back in the title. Exactly the same character, but he plays his grandson. And actually quite a sad moment when you actually find Linebeck from the Phantom Hourglass's grave. He's actually there. You know, he's died. And although he was a bit of an annoying character, it's that thing where you think, oh, this is what Zelda's about in terms of a story which sort of plays through the different ages. Overall, I would say the gameplay is good, very similar to the Phantom Hourglass. The main issue for me with the Phantom Hourglass was the travel elements and the repetition elements. The gameplay itself was actually okay, absolutely fine. Graphically, almost exactly the same. Temple-wise, pretty much exactly the same as well. What Nintendo, I think, have done, they've gone, right, let's iron out those problems that we had, and let's keep a lot of the gameplay the same. So I would say, overall, great title. Those moments, though, which are of classic Nintendo quality, you've really, really got to wait for them.
It's a shame, really. Do you know, one of the main problems, I think, with the DS versions of Zelda is they've tried to create the kind of large scope that you've got in the big console ones, where you've got these big areas to explore, and it's kind of not the same on a handheld console. You just want to get to the raw parts of the game, which is the clever problem solving. If I look back to my favourite Game Boy Zelda games, you know, they're very, very simple, and there's not vast amounts of exploring. It's just about this problem solving in the temples. Also, I just think one of the simple things that kind of annoyed me while I was playing it is that because you move Link around with a stylus, your hand's covering the screen a lot of the time, which is frustrating.
Yeah, you do tend to sort of hold it right at the tip of the stylus. I think you're fine. That's what I tend to do.
Yeah, and you know, that's sort of a slight design flaw. So in the end, I ended up not enjoying it. But there you go. Such is life.
Portal.
What would make you stop playing,
by the way? What would make me stop playing that game? You know what?
Yeah.
There's not a lot at the moment. I'm playing it for sort of a couple of hours at a time in an evening. You know, I've not really been able to put it down, because the thing with Zelda, there's always that, like, well, I'll just get to the next dungeon and I'll just go down a couple of levels. But then you get so far down, you think, well, if I opt out now, when I get respawned, I'll end up back at the front door, and I don't want to do that. So it's that thing of, well, I'll just go down here. And if, for instance, I do a dungeon or I unlock a rail map, I then think, well, I'll just get to the start of the next rail map so that I can then uncover, you know.
Yeah.
So at the moment, not a great deal is making me stop playing this game.
Ah, good stuff.
About 4 years ago, a game called Portal came out, and we've only just got around to reviewing it. Is that fair to say?
Well, we weren't around 4 years ago, so we couldn't review it then. But the thing is, we said we were going to do another podcast, try and keep them more regularly, because we were a bit slapdash towards the end of last year. And I realised I had nothing to review. The only thing I've sort of been playing on the Xbox is Bioshock 2, which, of course, Rick reviewed for the PS3 and the last podcast, and they're essentially the same game. So I can only talk about what I've been playing, and the reason I've been playing it, which is more of a sort of news item really, which is Portal, which I'm sure plenty of people out there have played. It came bundled with the Orange Box, which of course had Half-Life and Half-Life 2, and it had chapters, you know, the extra chapters for that, and it had Team Fortress 2 on as well, these big Valve titles. And also was this curious little, quite short, not strictly first-person shooter game called Portal, which, if you've never played, is something which, when you first start playing it, it takes an immense amount of brain power to get your head around. Essentially, you're going round little maps like you are in a first-person shooter, and there aren't any enemies as such. There's often drone turrets here and there. But you've got this gun which can shoot an entrance and an exit hole into pretty much any wall, or ceiling. So you shoot an entrance hole in the wall next to you and an exit hole in the ceiling, and you walk through the hole in the wall, drop down through the hole in the ceiling, right? Sounds quite simplistic, but the sort of way they've used it to create these fiendishly difficult problems, It's just absolutely incredible. It's really, it's one of those games that you play it and you think, this is actually a brand new mechanic that no one has ever really thought of before. Have you played it, Mick?
I have, yeah. You know where I've played it? If anyone goes to the website, alinktothecast.co.uk, you will see the little pictures of myself, of Rick and of Brian, sort of cast as Zelda characters. I'm the one with the glasses in the Link outfit. The guy who's done that is an extremely talented comic artist who does a web comic, and he's called Stephen Hitchin. And his website, if I'm right in saying, is comics.stephenhitchin.com. And I think he's even done a comic related to the world of Portal. And he became absolutely obsessed with the game, played it absolutely non-stop, and I was around at his one weekend, and we just played through over and over and over, and it's almost hypnotic, I would say.
It is as well, and it's got this really cute little story. The little drones that shoot at you have got these robot-y voices, and when you knock them over, they're going like, ow, ow, and they go, I don't blame you. And they're just desperately cute. There's this really sort of sinister but sexy-sounding robot. not robot or artificial intelligence, since that's the boss battle at the end. From beginning to end, to play it through, this last time I played it through, it's about maybe 2.5-3 hours, because I sort of kind of worked out how to do the puzzles. Maybe a bit longer than that, actually.
I would say there's a bit more in there.
Yeah, possibly. And it's got this really cute song at the end when you finish it all.
This was a triumph.
It's just absolutely incredible. It's one of those games that when it's finished, you're like, I want more. And everyone's like, I want more. The reason it was on there is basically some students had put a tech demo together. I think it was called Narbacular Drop.
Good work, good
bizarre.
Work.
And the people at Valve, of course, who'd done Half-Life 2 and the such, said, that's great, can you turn it into a game for us? They turned it into a quite short game, and I think Valve weren't 100% sure about it. They were like, well, it might be great, might not be. We'll bung it on the Orange Box and see what people think about it. And of all the things you can play on Orange Box, and I mean, Half-Life 2 has had so much praise, it's the one that people have talked about again and again and again. And the reason it's in the news recently is Valve's online content providers, if I don't know what you call them anyway, Steam, if you've got a PC, is a way of getting games, downloading them, playing them online with other people. Suddenly, last month, new patches started arriving for Portal, which hadn't happened for a couple of years, and they were downloading, and they contained all these cryptic messages and clues that to cryptic photographs that you could then decode. And people are like, "Is there a new Portal game? Is there a new Portal game on the way?" And yes, there is.
There's
Portal 2, which about 3 years after Portal came out, 3 or 4 years, is about time from the amount of praise it's got. It's going to be on Xbox 360 and on Steam simultaneously to download, and I just can't wait.
Yeah,
there you go. It's brilliant viral advertising by Valve as well. It's a really good way of getting people interested. I mean, they think so far ahead and compared to other people, of actually reinvigorating an old game, changing the ending to hint that there's a brand new game coming. It's just amazing.
What would make you stop playing Portal? You're going to say Portal 2.
Portal 2 or Pikmin 2 and BioShock 2, which I've been playing a lot at the moment. I've gone back to Pikmin, if you ever played that on the GameCube, the Wii version of it, with slightly adjusted controls and slightly cleaner graphics. That's a great game to play as well. That's for anyone who's been playing Pikmin.
Yeah, absolutely. Right, great stuff. So there you go. Heavy Rain on PlayStation 3, Spirit Tracks on DS, and also Portal on Xbox 360 as a preview to Portal 2, which is coming, we think, very soon. Okay, in a few moments' time, we'll get Rick and Brian's thoughts on the headline competition. First of all, I was going to say the mailbag, and I've been calling it the mailbag for ages, which is the cheesiest thing ever. It's not, people don't send mail in. It's like, oh, a stamped addressed envelope. It's tweets. It's our Facebook and our Twitter feeds, which people have replied to. And if you want to get involved on there, you can go to our website, alinktothecast.co.uk, and you can follow us via there. There's links there where you can also find that competition for a Red Steel 2 copy, which you can have, which is coming out very soon. If you've got Wii Motion Plus, it's going to be an absolutely outstanding title. Our Twitter feeds, though, and our Facebook tweets are on there. Just go on there, and you can actually just go to the sites and type in a link to the cast. That would make more sense as well. Yannick says, Grrr, wishes she was celebrating Paddy's Day at the Union, but stuck in the flat, feeling ill, and nobody to go with. Such a saddo. This is appropriate to when we're actually recording the cast, depending on when you're listening to it. Yannick, we feel sorry for you. Christoph, for the win. How are you getting on with Spirit Tracks? Is the train good? I need to play it. Christoph, yes, you do need to play it. Is the train good? No. How am I getting on with it? I'm quite enjoying it. And off the back of a tweet which I put on related to a new Tomb Raider game, which is coming out soon, downloadable content only, though, somebody calling themselves BCL 1973. Oh my God, she is so hot. You would, wouldn't you? If you could, you would. Question, what game's character would you if you could?
There must be one that I've fancied at various points in time.
Rick, Kirby?
Definitely, yeah.
Oh, there's no need. There's no need, yes. So if there was one game's character you would... Let me just read it again. Oh my God, she is so hot. You would, wouldn't you? If you could, you know you would. Question, what game's character would you if you could? Yeah, so I'm not sure if we're really happy to answer that. Obviously, Rick is, but I think I'll pass on that one. Which brings us to the end of the podcast. I tell you what, if you listen to this podcast and you've got friends who are into video games and they don't know about us, do tell them, pass on the good news that we exist. Yes, we're good. Available on your computer, on iTunes as well via a link to thecast.co.uk, and you can download us on a regular basis. I say regular basis because sometimes it's every week, sometimes it's every third week. You know, Brian takes ages to edit this together. You know, he has to edit his own jokes in that we all laugh at. In reality, we've not laughed in reality. You know, we've had to sort of meld audio together from old cast just to make the whole thing damn work.
I often mispronounce a word or try and use a Ponty word and it sounds stupid. I'll go back and re-record over that. I have no shame in admitting I'm the editor. I have the power.
Rick, you never make a mistake though, do you?
No. No.
No, I didn't think so. The headline competition was related to Doctor Who, because Nintendo have done a deal with the BBC and Doctor Who's people that there will be a Doctor Who video game created and that will come out on both, I think, Wii and DS. And, well, the question is, what would a headline read in a tabloid newspaper for a Doctor Who video game? Ricardo, shall we start with you? What's your headline?
Well, the best I've got, I think, is it's a Wii TARDIS. And then, you could probably have another shot of Doctor Who and the Wii there. Mock it up with the TARDIS police box thing.
Absolutely dreadful. Brian Shelf, can you match that or can you beat that?
I don't know. I can't even think of one. My brain's... Right, the central cooling, I always call it that, and it's not called that. What's it called? The air conditioning in this studio isn't working, and it's about 38 degrees. I've had to turn the fan off because otherwise it makes a deafening noise. I'm sitting here. I've got a cold, so I'm pumped full of drugs.
Excuses.
I know, I can't even think of anything. I've written down the word TARDIS and then drawn a moon underneath it. Nintendo who? No, rubbish.
If you'd have drawn a TARDIS and put the moon on top, that would have looked like the new PS Move controller.
Hideous.
mine was the regeneration game.
The regeneration, they're very nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, thinking outside the box.
Absolutely. Doctor Who regenerates the regeneration game. Now, if I was to tell you that The Guardian also ran with Doctor Who's regeneration game, I honestly thought of it before I saw it, I promise. But yeah, regeneration game, I thought was okay. Rich, you were terrible as per usual.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay, that was episode 13 of A Link to the Cast. You can, if you want, go back through our archives. I can call them archives, can't I? There's like a year's worth of podcasts which you can still listen to via the website, alinktothecast.co.uk. Don't forget, tell your friends about us as well. You can also follow us on Facebook and on Twitter. Just go to Facebook and Twitter and type in A Link to the Cast. If you haven't got it already, it's a play on A Link to the Past, which was one of the first ever Zelda games. Do you get it? It makes sense now.
It's very clever.
It is very clever. So clever, only the clever people can get it.
What was the original title going to be? Didn't you come up with a really torturous one? I can't remember what it is now.
It was going to be Mix Ace Video Games Talk.
Mix Double Brilliant Robot Computer Games.
Yeah, digital.
But there you go. Anyway,
unlike this one, which everybody's talking about. Yeah, a link to thecast.co.uk. We will be back very soon. Rick will return with another PlayStation 3 review. I'll be back on. I promise I'll be back on with Call of Duty Modern Warfare for Wii. Yes, I promised to review it this time round. But you know what? I've been into Spirit Tracks, and like I say, it's worth getting into. I will be back on though with Modern Warfare Reflex Edition for the next cast. And Brian Shelf, you're going to review what, GoldenEye, by the way, going off the...
I think I might do it. There's quite a good game called Pong. I don't know if you're aware of it.
Excellent. It's almost as
it
good
stinks.
As...
It stinks. Hey.
What would make you stop playing that game? Frogger.
All right, I think that's
it. Speak to you soon. Goodbye.
Have fun. Bye.
By the way, my name's Rick. I look at... my name's Rick. Did I just say that?
Hey, how's it going? Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Definitely, yeah. No. I think that's all your punches. You're probably going to cut the crap out of it anyway, but what the hell?